Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob. Here, our last speaker is Professor Monica Muskell, from the School of Forest Resources. Her talk actually follows well with the previous talk when talking about buffers. Subject is LIDAR-based metrics for solar and energy attenuation in large wood supply potential in riparian forests.
Thank you. So my goal here for the next about 20 minutes or so is to let you know the developments in LIDAR technology that allow us to look at riparian function and conditions. So I'll try and build on things that we're already doing and show you an example of a preliminary research project that we've started over this past summer. I'll give you a little bit of background on general remote sensing and LIDAR and how it applies to forest inventory, really, and vegetation mapping. And I'll also touch upon how we're looking at leaf area index. I feel that leaf area index, as it has already been mentioned, it's one of those variables that feeds really well into many models. And LIDAR is one of those perfect tools that allows us to estimate leaf area index for very large extents. I feel that the large woody supply potential relates well, that analysis relates well to our methods in forest inventory. And then the solar energy attenuation or thermal loading is where the leaf area index comes in. And I want to talk just a little bit about future work as well, since I am just showing you a pilot project. So a little bit of a background here and some statements to so I don't get into trouble. When I talk about the solar energy attenuation or the thermal loading and the large woody supply potential, I'm trying to describe only two ecosystem functions out of riparian forests. I believe there are many, many more, and these are connected to some other ecosystem functions, but I'm not going to get into this. Also, thermal loading is the relative potential for the stream warming or the temperature of a stream. I'm not actually talking about stream temperatures, which would be very difficult to do at this point. I think it would require tremendous amount of site-specific calibration. That said, I think we're going to put out some sensors just to see if there are relationships between what we can do with the thermal attenuation models and the actual temperatures within a stream. I do want to point out that field studies represent only a snapshot in the spatial temporal continuum of what's happening at a landscape or a plot or a site or a watershed. Remote sensing is one of those tools that lets us often fill in the gaps, either spatially or temporally. We've been collecting remotely sensed data sets. LIDAR's been around for about 10 years now. The technology is definitely growing up, and we've had satellite sensors collecting good data sets, for example, Landsat sensors, since the 1970s. And then aerial photography going as back as the 1930s. My view on remote sensing, there's always a tool out there that answers the question. The trick is finding the tool that captured the information that you're interested in exploring. Unfortunately, the sensors aren't up there all the time, so knowing how to best utilize what it's available, and often fusing multiple platforms is the way to approach that. I won't talk too much about fusion, but really I do believe that remote sensing is stronger when we look at the very old photogrammetry air photos, historical air photos, and the very latest cutting-edge technologies as LIDAR. Just focusing on one technique, I think, doesn't allow us to do that continuous spatial temporal monitoring of landscapes. And finally, the final point here, I'd like you to think about this this concept of having applications, tools, and data, and uniting those to produce decision support tools that are really driven by geospatial data sets and geospatial applications. It's really that combination that allows us to understand an ecosystem function, or in this case, I'm talking about a riparian function, which supports, which can help us to support decision making in watershed restoration or in conservation. And another really key point, I think, just long-term monitoring. I think remote sensing, with the asset of having things such as what Jerry Franklin talked about, having these ground validation sites, monitoring networks, that's the key of making remote sensing really work. I don't think remote sensing will ever be able to disconnect itself from field data acquisition, especially because we're collecting data sets at such high resolution and not relying on field data observations to calibrate that data, I think is sometimes a mistake. Today I'm going to talk about two different types of, or two different flavors of LIDAR. One is airborne and one is ground LIDAR. These are very interchangeable to us, the way we can work with the data sets. We can use the same tools and apply them to aerial or ground-based LIDAR, but the two data sets are distinct. Aerial LIDAR, obviously the perspective is from above. You're collecting majority of your data from above the canopy and hitting the top of the canopy. As you go down through, especially a thick canopy, you lose the number of LIDAR hits that you might collect. But eventually you end up with ground hits as well. So here you go, the blue points, ground hits, and everything else in here is the tree canopy and the structure of that particular canopy. Individual trees, it really depends on the quality of LIDAR that we have, the density of the stand that we have. And LIDAR, even though we're into 10 years now, it is a technology that's continuously changing. So you have to be very careful and understand the quality and capabilities of the LIDAR data set that you have. LIDAR flown 5 years ago is very different from what we're flying today, in the sense that you have a lot more points that are hitting the targets of interest compared to one, if not even 1 point per square meter collected in 2000 to about 2005. We're flying data sets. The data set we analyzed here has a minimum of 20 points per square meter. That's minimum. We're getting to upwards of 100 points per square meter within the three-dimensional structure of our targets. And of course, the technology's been developed for a particular application, which is to look at topography. And although I think the ground models are critical, the topography is critical to what we do, we are really interested in canopies and the things in between the sensor and the ground itself. Now, LIDAR, I think, still has some room to grow in the direction of developing better techniques of how to fly the sensor to capture information not only on the ground, but also within the canopy. And that change will happen over time. Right, second flavor of LIDAR, it's the ground or terrestrial LIDAR. Notice the perspective differs. We're looking side angles into the forest stands. Of course, when we have facilities such as Wind River Canopy Crane, ideally it'd be nice to bring in even terrestrial type of LIDAR into a platform and be able to collect very dense data sets from multiple perspectives. Same issue with having more points closer to the sensor less points behind and some objects obscuring our data collection. With the ground LiDAR, a lot of the time we're collecting the data from multiple view angles. I don't think ground LiDAR is a tool that you'd go out there and scan all of the Earth and call it quits. To us, it's a calibration tool. It allows us to calibrate the aerial LiDAR that's being collected. If you've been paying attention to remote sensing and multispectral remote sensing, we use spectral radiometers to calibrate satellite-based sensors. The spectral radiometers are often handheld instruments on the ground. The terrestrial LiDAR, think of it in that sense. It's a calibration tool where we can collect very high-density data sets, now billions of points for a stand or even a particular tree, but we're not going to collect a continuous data set through a landscape. It's a sampling tool at a plot site. Some interesting things ecologically out of aerial LiDAR, because we're hitting the top of the canopy very well, canopy roughness is one of those first indicators that can tell us about a lot about the structure of the forests. Of course, with ground LiDAR, notice that sometimes we actually do not hit all of the canopies. We omit some points at the top of the canopy unless we can look down into the canopy or the gaps between trees are large enough, allowing us to hit the trees. However, with both data sets, what we're collecting very well is this intermediate area within the point cloud, and that is where I think the leaf area index, LAI information, lives. Some other differences between aerial and terrestrial. We cannot get directly DBH measurements out of aerial LiDAR. And if you've lived in the Netherlands, you're going to shake your head and go, you're not reading the literature, because there's been a nationwide acquisition flown in the Netherlands that is extracting DBH out of aerial LiDAR. It's the type of forests that they have. They've flown the data on a helicopter. Obviously, a country much smaller in size can be covered with a very dense LiDAR point cloud, and they are getting DBH. They're also flying the data set at a slight angle, so that allows you to look instead of directly from above at a slight angle and get DBH relationships developed from aerial LiDAR. So technology is continuously changing and improving. With terrestrial LiDAR, we can get DBH, and in fact, we can measure that all along the trunk of the tree. So it's not just DBH, it's really the trunk of the tree and the measurements along there. If we get a good view angle, we can measure the height of the tree. We can measure things such as the bottom of the canopy and some other metrics that might be important, not just for riparian studies, but for other applications. So that said, really the two critical data sets that are derived out of LiDAR these days and sort of applied on a large landscape level are the canopy models. And what you're looking at here is a LiDAR data set that's fused with imagery. LiDAR does not have color in it. It's a data set collected often in the near-infrared portion of the spectrum. It has gray brightness levels, intensity levels, but it does not have color. The color in this image comes out of photography coloring the point cloud. More importantly, the secondary data set, and for everything that we do, it's really the starting point, which is the ground model. These ground models are far superior to what we have from USGS. We're looking at ground models of 10 to a meter in resolution. And in fact, LiDAR that's about 5 years old, 10 meters is your average, 10 to 5 meters is your average resolution of a ground model. But the last 5 years, we can produce ground models that are a meter, if not better, in in resolution. Of course, what you call ground is often sort of difficult. Do you look at the top of the rock that's in the forest, or do you look at the bottom? Do you include that noise? Do you exclude that noise? How do you filter it out? So a lot of technique still goes into making good ground models, and that's a good thing. You can't do good LIDAR analysis without focusing some time on the quality of your ground model. And there are certain characteristic things that you can look for in ground models that indicate problematic issues. Let's see here if we can. There we go. So what you're looking at here is just a sample taken out of a LIDAR point cloud, and we're sampling a tree. What you can see is once we've standardized the data, we told the computer the ground is here, the rest of the point cloud is here. You can actually take some measurements out of the point cloud, and individual tree measurements, such as height being one of them, or even crown diameter. Here's an example early on, 2003, from Hans Andersen. He's done some work for the Precision Forestry Co-op, and you can see even early on, we can take a LIDAR point cloud and extract forest inventory information out of it. We can even just take a canopy surface model and look for peaks in that canopy surface, which we attribute to being the dominant trees within the canopy. This is still sort of the standard method of doing forest inventory, but my lab has moved beyond that method, and really what we're doing is wrapping trees around with mathematical envelopes, as you see right here, and attributing various inventory parameters other than DBH, although that can allometric relationship can be built per species with your tree height, crown diameter, and DBH. And you can see these models are fairly complex. We can apply this on terrestrial or LIDAR data. Or aerial LIDAR data. It's interchangeable. We can also go beyond regular inventory and look at things such as fuel metrics. And really, the reason I brought this up is because even when we're doing that sort of work, that ground model is critical. And notice the strong relationships between the models. And then forest inventory characterization, such as DBH. So this is some stands scanned with terrestrial LIDAR in the arboretum. Notice that we can model the trunks of the trees with our LIDAR point cloud and develop fairly strong models for the terrestrial LIDAR for DBH. Not so good for height because we're not capturing the height of the trees. So for large woody supply potential, how can this be done? Theoretically, the steps involved, getting that ground model, generating stream information out of it if you don't have a good stream layer, buffering the streams. And the big question is, where do you buffer? What kind of buffers do you want? It's a continuous data set, so you might not even buffer. Do the analysis and figure out which buffer works best afterwards. Again, it's a spatially explicit data set. Once we have the terrain model, we can begin to identify stables, slopes, produce canopy models, for example, for unstable slopes, just to limit the processing, and then look at large trees. Big question comes up, how do you know if the trees are healthy? LIDAR's not the best tool for that. Hyperspectral remote sensing would be the best tool. Extremely expensive. There are projects being undertaken looking at the intensity data out of LIDAR and looking at tree health, so we'll see where we get with that in a couple years. And finally, assessing the wood supply potential into a stream. So we're done talking about the debris loading into a stream. I want to start focusing on the thermal loading and kind of look back at what we can do with remote sensing. We've had imagery, aerial imagery, collected since the 1930s, and gaps can be identified in that type of imagery. Unfortunately, the biggest problems with gap identification in a data set that's flat is that you miss a lot of the gaps. What you're looking at here is a LiDAR model identifying gaps. Some of the very large gaps are missed by the LiDAR data. These are the red identified gaps is what you can get out of the imagery itself. Of course, there are problems with LiDAR as well, where aerial photography can help. So really, the point of fusing your data sets and drawing on multiple data sets is important. All right, let's get to leaf area index and how we can implement that in thermal loading. And to give you an idea why you can get leaf area index out of LiDAR, we are getting thousands of points sometimes per leaf. Anyone can give me a species here? Probably a cedar. If you can do that type of identification out of LiDAR data, you're obviously seeing a lot of information and structure about the tree. So just to summarize some older projects, very strong relationships between LiDAR-based leaf area index and a destructive sample. LiDAR tends to overestimate a little bit. We can also do that at larger scales. This is the same sort of approach where we used, instead of terrestrial LiDAR, aerial LiDAR for all of the arboretum to estimate leaf area index for the arboretum. And finally, a quick little example of the pilot project looking at the city of Olympia. And I think it's important to look at urban areas. They're sort of that final defense system before we get into the big water bodies. So we still have, from this land use land cover map, you can see there are still forested areas close to large bodies of water. Why not try and figure out how much protection or thermal loading can we get out of these urban or near urban area forests? This is the LiDAR data set for Olympia fused with imagery, again, just to demonstrate the quality of the data, very high resolution spatial extent of that data set covers. What I really wanted you to see is that it covers in the background multitude of land use land cover classes, and that is interesting. And finally, our pilot project, we have three different areas that we're looking at. A very, very small basin for a creek, a larger creek watershed, and then a slightly larger area to span the multiple land use land cover classes that we can encounter here. And the area that I'm quickly going to show some results is from Dog Creek near Evergreen State College. Very small area. The reason we focused on it is because we have terrestrial LiDAR there. These are our terrestrial LiDAR sites. This data set only cut out the plots, but the plots are actually continuous throughout the data, meaning I can look in my LiDAR point cloud and see the site that I scanned next. But as you recall, the farther I am from my sensor, the less points I have. We want it to work with very, very dense point clouds. This is what the data looks like. Sort of messy, but you can almost see the trees. And this is not Olympia. This is at Wind River Canopy Crane. We have a couple sites here. So I thought since Jerry was going to be talking, I'd show you one of the locations and just give you an idea of the type of density of a point cloud. Various forest classes, and finally the simplified model. So we tried and built a very quick general model. We're not into the model development. as much as just trying to test how to implement the LiDAR into existing tools such as ArcMap solar radiation tool. There are great modelers out there that are doing the modeling, and that's why I don't think it's necessary for us. Jessica showed some work already from Doug Sprugel, so there's no need for us to try and develop the model. Really, how do we implement the LiDAR into these models? So essentially, we're taking metrics out of this point cloud, looking at the site from multiple dates, hours within the date, and cumulatively looking at the thermal loading for the site. Ideally, we can take individual dates, individual hours, and do comparisons as well. Canopy roughness, I think that we can get out of LiDAR. We're not implementing it here, but imagine what's happening to light at the top of the canopy. It's getting scattered. LiDAR is getting that information. So I think models that look at the diffusion of light and light scattering could benefit from that surface roughness as well. And finally, some results. This is the surface out of aerial LiDAR right here, terrestrial LiDAR. You can see a lot of micro topography. We essentially removed the trees, which are actually causing some major issues because they show us these high peaks within the data, but these continue on into a full-grown tree. And just to give you some sense of where digital train models are at, you'd get one value for 10 meters out of USGS data sets. This is the microtype topography we get out of terrestrial LiDAR. This is the type of things we get out of the aerial LiDAR. And finally, the radiation, cumulative radiation for these two sites. And what you can see, the dark areas have less radiation. So there are these thermal sinks at these sites. Some of them have a lot to do with canopy shading. And in fact, when you begin to compare the minimum values for for terrestrial versus aerial LiDAR, you'll see an order of magnitude the thermal values that we're getting out of these fine resolution data sets, which is starting to worry me because it's indicating that there's going to have to be a lot more calibration going in. And I think we could be overestimating thermal heat within forests through using very coarse data sets. Of course, we need to do this for multiple areas, multiple land use, land covers. One way to do that is really to couple our information with existing models. One of those, Earth System Institute, has a net map tool that really utilizes information about vegetation, such as height. So height is easily extractable out of LiDAR. And this is based on Beer's law, but I think we can fill in that information through the leaf area index. And finally, that canopy roughness, that's not even implemented in this model, so we might be able to push it a little farther. So future work, definitely refine the solar energy attenuation, implement canopy roughness into the model, test this model in riparian zones adjacent to a wide range of land use land cover areas, continue to work on the large woody supply potential estimation, and then finally, one other thing that we haven't even looked at, but it's possible out of LiDAR, is the sediment loading. We do get really good surface models out of LiDAR. So how about looking at sediment loading, which would be the next step in the work? And, of course, all of the people that are involved from the Evergreen State College to the City of Olympia and a whole bunch of field assistants that went out with us and did the field data collection during the summer.
Problems and opportunities with using LiDAR to try to get a handle on branch rain, senescence, the detachment of branch as a source of channel wind. Yes or no?
Not out of aerial LIDAR. I don't think so. Unless there is one potential of doing that if we flew the LIDAR through the corridor and looked sideways into the stands, but it's not the typical collection of LIDAR that we get through USGS or Puget Sound LIDAR Consortium. So I'm not ruling it out, but not out of the typical LIDAR data sets that are freely available.
Yep. Do you get an idea of like moisture content in a forest?
Not out of LIDAR, but there are other remote sensing platforms that could do that. So you could look at thermal imagery, develop some relationships. Another sensor is radar. And multispectral data has some water absorption bands in it as well. So again, that advocacy of fusing multiple remote sensing platforms, not just LIDAR.
Okay. Thank you, Monica.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes this session. We will be back here at 1:15 with the third session. I want to please remind you to, if you haven't registered, please register out in the counter outside. It's really helpful for us to know where you're from and also to get back to you later. Thanks again.